My name is Stephen Watt, and I'm a staff attorney with the Human Rights Programme of the ACLU.
My name is Stephen Gray. I'm a freelance journalist who's been writing a book which has just come out called Ghost Plane, The True Story of the CIA Torture Programme.
So you mentioned that there was this form of the rendition programme or torture programme in existence prior to September the 11th. After the 11th, September the 11th, you say the programme expanded dramatically. When did you first personally become aware of the existence of this new form of the rendition programme?
Yes, I think, as I say, rendition, I think, has become a sort of torture programme. I wouldn't say it began in that way. I first became aware of it after September the 11th, in fact, when I was in a conversation, an interview with Porter Goss, who was the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee. He didn't tell me anything classified, but he just told me about that there was this idea of rendering people what he called some form of justice. He said, have you heard of this concept? And I said, no, because I hadn't. It was just quite ironic, really, that this is the man who went on to lead the CIA and set me off on this investigation, really, to find out what all that meant, because it didn't take much digging to find out that the sort of renditions that they'd been describing publicly until that point have been renditions of people back to a US courtroom, and that's been going on since the 1880s. It's been legal in the US to bring people back to trial here, regardless of how they were captured. But since the mid-90s, it emerged, they've been quietly getting on with another type of rendition, which was this rendition to third countries. And what happened after September 11th, not only were the numbers increased, but there were new as already mentioned, that they sent people who weren't actually charged with anything in the countries where they were wanted or didn't actually come from there. They also added new destinations. We now see places like Syria, where torture is quite renowned, infamous, and a country like Uzbekistan, where also it seems some prisoners have been sent.
Isn't it the case, say, for example, Syria? It's designated by the Department of State as a terrorist-sponsoring country, and the United States, for all intents and purposes, has no diplomatic relations with Syria, yet it's sending high-level terror suspects into their custody and control. There's this disconnect, is there not? The United States doesn't cooperate with Syria diplomatically, yet it's going to send these high-level suspects who may have information to that country. Why would this happen?
Well, I think in diplomacy there's always a twin track. There's the public face and what actually happens on the ground, and intelligence agencies have contacts with all kinds of people that State Department and public diplomats would not have contacts with. And there was a period of quite intense cooperation with Syria, probably the first 2 years after September the 11th, when, whilst the rhetoric of the US government was maintained against Syria and it was declared to be a candidate member of the Axis of Evil, there was this covert relationship going on as well, in which large amounts of pieces of information was shared, and Americans in fact claimed that the Syrian regime helped save American lives with the intelligence they provided. I haven't really seen any evidence for that. That's the claim. And people were sent to Syria, and there is obviously a well-known case which you know well about, the case of Meher Arar, the Canadian citizen who was sent to Syria from New York. And it's just quite interesting for me that when I researched this, to find how many other prisoners were also there in the same prison in Syria, the Palestine branch, an interrogation center of Syrian military intelligence, to find how many people were there who'd also been sent up to the United States, mainly from Pakistan and also from Morocco.